the field turns for home.
They're at the top of the stretch.
Top of the stretch.
They're into the stretch.
And here they come into the final furlong.
Final furlong.
Final furlong.
Into the final furlong.
They go inside the final furlong.
This is the final furlong on HRRN Live.
HRRN Live.
It's Trainer Talk Wednesday. Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
And welcome to another edition of Trainer Talk here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Lexington, Kentucky studios here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, getting you ready for this Trainer Talk edition and a very lively edition as well. Looking forward to this one. Trainer Eddie Keneally is going to be with us in the first half of the show, and then trainer Ian Wilkes, fresh off that victory in the Breeders' Cup Classic, will be here to join us in the second hour. Both of those gentlemen have great stories to tell in terms of how they got involved in racing, and we're going to kick things off with Eddie right now here on HRN. Eddie, thanks for taking a few minutes to be with us here today.
Yeah, Mike, no problem whatsoever. Glad to be able to take part.
Well, look, this show, as I had mentioned to you earlier, very much about you as an individual and your career and how you got started. And I know it's a great story, obviously, being born in Ireland. And tell us how you came about getting involved in horse racing. There's no Irish people in horse racing.
It's true. It's hard not to be involved in the horse business or in the horse entertainment in one way or another if you're born and raised in Ireland, as I was, on a farm to where we always had a few horses around the place. So me and my brothers and sisters, we've been around horses since we were little kids, riding horses and going to show jumping for ponies and hunting and going to watch some flat and steeplechase racing as kids. So we were exposed to it from an early age.
Yeah, you mentioned being raised on a farm and always being around it. How much of that has kind of influenced you as to where you are now, just always being around it from an early age?
Yeah, my dad loved horses, and he used to break a lot of horses for some people in the area. And my uncle was the leading jump jockey, and after retiring from being a rider, became a successful trainer. So we always knew about racing and were involved in it in some way or another from an early age, and followed it very closely as kids as well, and liked to go to the races and bet and handicap and such. So it's kind of like second nature, really, to me and the rest of my family.
Yeah, you mentioned your uncle John. He was second in the 1964 Aintree Grand National aboard a horse called Purple Silk. Do you remember that race?
That was a little bit before I was born, but I've heard a lot of stories about it and seen the replay of the race. And yeah, I mean, he was one of the leading jump riders during that era in England and had a lot of success as a rider. So, you know, it's just like I say, part of our upgrowing, being involved with the game and learning to love it from a young age.
What pushed you into getting into the business yourself?
Well, I first started to work with, when I left school, I first started to work doing some yearlings, weanling to yearling pinhooking, working for one of the most successful pinhooking guys in Ireland, Camas Park Stud, which is owned by Tim Hyde. And he was one of the leading pinhookers in the business. So it didn't live too far from me, so I went to work for him for a couple of years. And that was a great education for me. It really wasn't a whole lot to do with racing as such. It actually had, in a way, it had very little to do with racing, but it had a lot to do with learning how to take care of the horses and prepare the young horses for the yearling sales. So I was involved in that for a couple of years and came to this country, to Kentucky, actually, to continue doing the same yearling prep and the pin hooking, and just went from that to the racetrack because I could ride. So it just kind of came together. It wasn't the plan originally. The plan wasn't to be on the racetrack, but it just worked out well. Went to work on the racetrack, galloping horses at first, and it all went from there.
And you worked for Rusty Arnold, right? Didn't you work with Rusty for a while?
I did indeed. That was one of the first gallop jobs that I had when I started galloping horses on the track at Keeneland and at Payson Park in the winter, working for Rusty and breaking some yearlings too in the Lexington area after morning training at the track. I did make a lot of yearlings around the Lexington farms for a couple of years before I went and spent more time on as an assistant trainer. So didn't do a whole lot of breaking after that. Once you become an assistant, you're kind of stuck in the barn all day. You don't get a chance to do anything else.
Well, your sale experience certainly explains why your horses look so good. I've always been impressed, and I've told you this before, but for our listeners' sake, you know, you have the first set out on the track almost every morning, and your horses always look so good. I mean, it's just a pleasure to watch them come out, and you know, they're always shiny and seem very happy, and you have such a good organization, and that's got to come from your sale roots.
Part of that does come, yeah. Yeah, we take pride in how our horses look, and certainly we always want them to look as well as they possibly can. So that's just kind of the only way we know how to do it. We wouldn't know how to do it any other way. But put a lot of pride into it, and I think the horses look well, and if they're happy and healthy, I think they, if they're in the right spot, they tend to run well.
Eddie, who's had the most influence on your career now as a trainer? Anybody that you grew up working with and working for that's had that type of influence?
Well, yeah. I mean, the main guy that I worked for learning how to train in this country was Tom Skiffington, and I spent about 5 years working for him as an assistant. And Tom has since retired, but he had a lot of success as a trainer in this country and at one time was in the top 10 trainers in the nation and had lots and lots of success. And a lot of the philosophies and a lot of the way we go about training a horse comes from what I learned while I worked for Tom, and an excellent horseman. And definitely he'd be the one that I would say I learned the most from as far as learning how to become a horse trainer.
Yeah, he was a very talented guy. Used to hang out at Eddie Gregson's barn when he was in California for races and whatnot. And then the last time I saw him was down at Gulfstream. He was hanging out with Jerkins. So he always kept himself in some pretty good company. So
true. his horses always looked very well also, and he's a good caretaker, and that's where I learned most of what we do today in our day-to-day training came from there.
What are some of the things that you took away from working with Tom, Eddie, that you still employ in your operation today?
Well, we still use the exact same feed program that he did. It hasn't changed at all. A lot of guys nowadays want to jump to something new all the time and change and just experiment with new supplements and new different vitamin products. That there are so many new products on the market nowadays that it's very easy to be swayed and it's very easy to continuously chop and change. But we've stuck with the same feed program that I learned from him, and we use the exact same feed supplements, and everything is the exact same. So, you know, I think that's part of what I learned there, and I still continue to do that. But the main thing is to know your horse, be around your horses a lot to where you can get a good feel for your horses, and you know when they're doing well then. If you're around them a lot, you know when they're doing well and when their horse may not be at its very best. So I think it's about having a good feel for the horses that are in your barn, and I think I learned that too from Tom Skiffington.
Talking to trainer Eddie Keneally here on the Final Furlong Trainer Talk Show on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Eddie, as I listen to you talk, and you talk about being around them with the sales prep and then being very, very much hands-on with your operation, I've always said that there's trainers and there's horsemen, and you're obviously a horseman. Talk about how hands-on you really are with your operation and your horses.
Well, I am hands-on, and I like to be hands-on, but at the same time, when you have 40 or 50 horses like what we have right now, you can't do it all yourself. So you have to be hands-on, sure, I think, because I like doing it, so I like to be hands-on. But two, you need good help as well, and we're fortunate that we've got some very good people over the years, some assistants and foremen, and some good riders too. And I think it's very important to have quality riders, riders that know and care about the horses that they get on. And we try to keep good people. Obviously, the grooms are very, very important too. We've got some grooms that have been with us for 15 years, 10, 12, 15 years. So we've got a good crew. We pay them well, but it's important. It's very important to have good people, I think. So definitely the crew is a big part of it.
Yeah, the longevity of your help is just another indication that it's a pleasure to work at the Keneally Barn. I've seen your riders in action. They take plenty of time with the horses. They're never in a rush. And that's always an issue when you have riders that are working freelance or don't take time with the horses. It can be quite frustrating. So it's great when you have somebody that'll, school them in the paddock or do whatever that needs to be done with them instead of just trying to get on, 20 a day.
Yeah, the freelance riders, that system doesn't work for me. We like to take our time, and the guys that get on the horses for me are salary riders, so they're there all morning. So we take our time, and we're not in a rush, and we just give the horses as much time as they might need. So I think it's not only the riders don't need to be in a hurry or whatever, but they need to be able to ride as well. And quality riders, I think they're getting harder and harder to find, but they're still out there. It's just a question of getting them on your program.
Yeah, and I think it actually becomes more like a family, so to speak, with having people that have been involved for so long. You get to know them, they know you, and I think that's really beneficial. And speaking of family, you mentioned your brothers, your sisters, when we first started the conversation, Eddie. Are they in the business as well?
Well, they're all familiar with the business and grew up in it. Some of them, and most of them are not. I've got one brother who's a breeder, and he spent some time in Kentucky working on some of the breeding farms in Kentucky, but now he's situated and settled in Australia, and he's got a breeding and sales company down there and doing quite well at that. My brother John, and he's the only other one in my family that actually makes a living out of the horse business, but they're all fans of the game, and they like to go to the races whenever they can and play the horses.
And in terms of your horses, let's get to the horses for a minute. You've had some really good ones in your barn. Your favorite, Kelly's Landing? Am I going out on
Kelly's
a limb?
Kelly's Landing, yeah. I mean, Kelly's Landing was our first grade one winner. He won the Dubai World Cup, Dubai Golden Shaheen, the sprint race out there. And a great horse, broke a track record at Churchill, won five stakes in this country as well. So a very good horse. Well, our best horse, I'm using him as a stable pony right now. He's a gelding as a racehorse, and he's since retired, and I use him as a stable pony, and he's worked out real well at that also. But we've had some other good horses over the years, but I guess because Kelly's Landing was our first real breakthrough horse, I guess he's probably the one that, and he's still around, so he's probably the one that would come to mind first.
What do you think your strong suit is as a trainer? What areas do you excel in?
Well, I think we do well with good horses. I mean, whether they're good at two, good at three, good on grass, good on dirt, I think we do well with any kind of horse, provided they can run. They obviously have to have a certain amount of talent to begin with if they're going to be able to compete on the competitive circuit that we run in. We're involved in racing in New York and Kentucky and Florida for the most part, and that's the toughest circuit in the country. So we have to have quality horses, first of all, to be able to compete. So if we get a quality young horse, we can do well with that. But if we get a quality older horse from Europe, or a horse that needs to run long on the grass or whatever, we can do well with those kind of horses. So basically, it's about the horse. If you get quality horses, I think we can do well with any of them.
Yeah, and going back to Kelly's Landing for just a minute, talking about quality horses, you mentioned that race, the Dubai Golden Shaheen, with Frankie Dettori aboard that day. What was that experience like for you, Eddie, going over to Dubai, being part of all that?
Yeah, well, certainly I've been watching the races from Dubai for years, and familiar with the challenge it might be to bring one over there and win a race. And so it was rewarding to be able to bring the very first horse we brought to Dubai, to be able to go over there and actually get the job done and win the race. And so it was very satisfying from that standpoint. And certainly I'd like to be able to go back and take another horse back over there or back to Dubai. We haven't been back since. It just wasn't a suitable horse to take, and we didn't want to go just for the sake of going. But certainly that's something I'd like to do in the future is win another race or two out there, for sure.
How'd you like the Dubai experience?
It was a great experience. It's great to see all the quality horses from all over the world running at the highest level. The purses are great. It was a great week. Like I said, I'd love to go back every year if I had the right horse.
Who else outside of Kelly's Landing really sticks out in your career?
Well, definitely Bushfire, because she was a leader as a three-year-old in the three-year-old filly division. She won three Grade One races as a three-year-old. She won the Ashland and the Acorn and the Mother Goose, and was an Eclipse Award finalist a few years back. She kind of helped put us on the map. I don't know that we're on the map, but it helped bring awareness to people that we were able to get the job done, and we know what we're doing. So getting a quality filly like that and doing so well with her certainly was a boost, and certainly she's one to remember.
What do you mean you don't know if you're on the map? You're on this show, aren't you? You get to this level. There is no higher level, Eddie.
I've reached the ultimate.
The pinnacle of success.
Okay.
Well, everybody knows the blue and cream-colored K. Everywhere you go, you see it every morning on the racetrack, and they're the first set out there every morning, so... I think you've definitely arrived.
Well, great. Well, that's nice to hear, guys, and hopefully we can continue to progress and continue to be able to compete at a high level. Like I say, it is a tough circuit that we race on. We rarely ship to the smaller tracks just to win a race. We try to make do on the better tracks to where we're at. I mean, if we're stable at Churchill, we're going to be running at Churchill. If we're stable at Belmont, we'll run at Belmont. We won't ship a horse to Mountaineer or to Penn or wherever they might need to go to win. We'd rather just try and knock it out there where we're stable, if possible. Certainly, we'll ship all over the country for a stakes race. But for the day-to-day racing, I like to race where we're stable.
Eddie, are there other horses in your mind, outside of the ones that you've had the privilege to train, the likes of Kelly's Landing and Bushfire, are there other horses you've been around when you were working for other trainers that really stick out in your mind and you say, wow, that was a really special horse?
Yeah, I mean, Tom Skiffenden had a lot of nice grass horses while I worked there. He had a filly called Fieldy, who at age seven won seven stakes. A very tough older mare on the grass. She was a special filly because I flew around the country with her to California, to Canada, to Louisiana, to Florida with her to win stakes. And I spent a lot of time with that filly. Her name was Fieldy, and she was a very, very good filly. She never won a grade one, but she knocked out a lot of money as a race mare. So there are some fillies like her, horses like that maybe are not household names, but still quality horses. So I've been around a lot of hard-knocking older horses, and they're the kind of horses that kind of stick in your mind.
Do you like to buy yearlings? Are you a frequent yearling sale purchaser?
Absolutely, yeah. We've done well buying yearlings. Typically, a lot of our clients like to shop at the September Keeneland September sale, and we bought some horses there over the years. We bought some nice horses for Lally Stable and Homewrecker. Some of our main guys like to shop at that sale, and we've had some luck buying some good horses there.
Trainer Eddie Keneally, our special guest here on Trainer Talk on HRN's Final Furlong Show. All right, Eddie, let's have a little fun. What does Eddie Keneally do? Eddie Keneally gets a day off from horse racing, which I know doesn't happen. But what would Eddie Keneally do on his day off?
Well, you know what? If I get a little time, I like to catch up on. I watch a lot of soccer, the Premier League in England. I like to watch Premier League soccer. So if I get a chance at all to sit down in front of the TV and there's not a whole lot of racing going on, I'll watch soccer. I play quite a bit of racquetball, so I do get involved in that a little bit. And after work or whatever, I'll play racquetball if I can get away. But yeah, I mean, not a whole lot of time off, so I wouldn't really know what to do for the most part.
Any trainers you like to beat up playing racquetball or jocks?
I've had an opportunity to play against quite a few of them. All right, there's a couple of guys now that that I've played. Mike Gonzalez is a guy I played a time or two. He's an agent for Eddie Castro, who rides in New York on the New York circuit. I've played against Mike a time or two. But yeah, I haven't really played against too many trainers over the years.
Who's your arch nemesis in there on the racquetball court? You must have somebody you just can't get by him.
Well, you know what? That's the challenge. When you play racquetball, you always got to try and match yourself up against somebody that's a little bit better. And where I play, yeah, there's always one or two guys or several guys that are a little better than you. And that's the challenge. It's a great workout if you're playing against somebody that's just a little bit better than you, because it makes you really, really work at it. And I enjoy playing against some of those guys that are a little better than me.
If you ever get out to California for a steak, try to get a game with Pat Valenzuela. He's a hell of a player.
Is he really? Okay.
Yeah, really good. Okay. Really good player. He kicks my brother's ass all the time.
Okay. I'll keep that in mind. I might have to avoid him.
who's the Premier League team that you follow?
You know what? I don't have a team that I follow. I just like to watch the league. I don't really have any one team. If I was to pick a team, it'd probably be Liverpool. But there's no one team that I really root for. I just really like watching the game. I think it's soccer at the highest level. I just like to enjoy watching it.
All right, Eddie, you get a youngster that comes up to you now and says, hey, I want to be a trainer. What advice are you giving him?
The best advice I'd say is to just work hard and try to find some guy that that you admire and that you think knows what he's doing, a trainer that you admire and you think that you can get along with this particular trainer. Spend some time there and work hard and try to learn and try to look and listen and see what's going on. Don't try to learn it all overnight. Don't try to figure it all out in a couple of weeks. Spend the time, a couple of years there, and take your time and don't try to rush to know everything on day one, because you're not going to learn it all on day one. And read the form, handicap the races, and try to learn what it takes to win. And I think the guys that read the form closely and watch the races and check the charts and figure out what it takes to win and what kind of horses are winning the races. Just that. Just try and work hard and spend a little time at it. And don't try to be ready to go training overnight.
Yeah, that's, you know what? I've been interviewing trainers for a long time, and and I was one, and I've never heard anybody explain it better. That's the way to do it, I think. Patience, and you need to learn patience if you're going to be a trainer, and you can't go out there and earn an Eclipse Award in 2 weeks, which a lot of people try to do.
A lot of the young kids, they've never worked for a trainer before, but they want to be a trainer, which is great. But they want to learn it all in a couple of weeks or a couple of months or whatever the case might be. And the best way you're going to learn is if you just pay attention to what's going on. You don't have to ask everything about what's going on. If you look, you don't even have to ask. If you spend a little time there and learn to know what's going on, you can, if you're observant, you can see what's happening without even having to ask. But it is important to read the form and check charts and just figure out what horses are winning races and what type of horses can win and in what type of races. I think that's important, and a lot of the guys don't think that's quite so important.
Well, Eddie, you do it as good as anybody, and you're a class act. You've always been very gracious to me with your time coming on the shows, and I want to thank you for being here tonight as well. It was a lot of fun to talk to you, learn about your background and how you got started, and really appreciate you being aboard.
Well, I'm glad to be involved, and I appreciate being asked on, and we'll do it again sometime.
All right, good stuff. Eddie Keneally, we'll talk to you soon. Good luck.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
If you want to learn more about Eddie, you can visit his website, KeneallyRacing.com. That's KeneallyRacing, KeneallyRacing.com, and Keneally Racing Stables.
Yeah.
Great advice.
Yeah.
Great
excellent
advice.
Excellent. That's a cool thing about these trainer talk shows. You get to really get a little background on some of these guys that you see, or you see their horses. And I've been an admirer of his stable for a long time because it reminds me of mine. First horses on the track, the horses look good and happy, you know, just listening to him talk about, you know, how he does things.
That was an interesting thing that you picked up on when he was talking about the sales prep and learning about the business, doing sales prep first,
right,
and making the horses look so good for the sales. And you're right, that's probably a big part of why his horses look so good on the track.
Yeah, I mean, for the sales, that's all you have to go on is looks. It's a beauty contest for the sales, but his horses always look great in the morning.
Another horse that looked great this past weekend was Fort Larned, winning the Breeders' Cup Classic. Ian Wilkes, the trainer of that classic winner, is going to join us in the second half of Trainer Talk coming up here in just a couple of moments. Looking forward to talking to Ian. Should be a lot of fun as we get set for the final 16th of the final furlong, the second half of the show. Ian Wilkes aboard next here on the Final Furlong Trainer Talk.
You're listening to the Final Furlong on HRRN Live.
Imagine having 80 channels of live, full card, uninterrupted simulcast feeds delivered direct to your home television for just $50 a month. Choose from your favorite thoroughbred, harness, quarter horse, and greyhound tracks in North America and internationally. Call Dish Network at 1-888-677-5487 and ask for RTN, the Racetrack Television Network. RTN is the only place where you can see every race from every simulcast every day.
Hey racing fans, don't miss your chance to check out Racing 101 from America's Best Racing. Racing 101 is a national tour visiting the country's leading racetracks to help introduce new fans to the sport and help enhance your experience at the track. Now you have the chance to learn fundamentals of the sport from the pros with one-on-one training and group seminars. Learn how to read the program, strategies for making wagers, what to look for in the paddock, how to manage your budgets, what to say at the betting window, and how to use the betting machines. And you'll have the chance to meet the stars of the sport up close with live interviews, autograph sessions, and photo opportunities. If you can't be there in person, log on to America's Best Racing at followhorseracing.com. That's followhorseracing.com.
Don't miss your chance to participate in the biggest handicapping event of the year, the Daily Racing Form NTRA National Handicapping Championship, presented by Sovereign Stable and Treasure Island Las Vegas. To be eligible, simply log on to nhctour.com and register for just $50. Compete in handicapping tournaments throughout the country and win your seat at the NHC to be held January 13, 2013, Treasure Island in Las Vegas, where one lucky player will win an estimated $1 million and an Eclipse Award as Handicapper of the Year. Visit nhctour.com to see a complete tournament schedule and register today.
Thousands of thoroughbred racing fans from over 50 countries read RacehorseReport.com on a regular basis. RacehorseReport.com offers great stories about racing's top players, both human and equine, Bob Kiekheffer's weekend stakes preview and his Monday racing roundup, weekly spot play selections, and successful betting strategies for racing's biggest days. From a neophyte fan to a hardened horse player, everybody can learn a little something at RacehorseReport.com. And for the best and up-to-the-minute racing information, follow Racehorse Report on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be right back. Want to know what we're up to?
Yeah.
Then log on to horseracingradio.net.
It appears that the website has become alive.
Horseracingradio.net is your official home for HRRN on the web. Read our blogs, download our podcasts, link up to our Twitter and Facebook pages, listen to live streaming of all of our broadcasts, and much more. HRRN is your home for racing's biggest events, and our home on the web is horseracingradio.net. That's horseracingradio.net.
Hi, this is Joel Rosario.
Hi, this is Jockey John Court.
Hi, this is Calvin Burrow. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It's Trainer Talk Wednesday on the Final Furlong on HRRN Live.
Welcome back to the second half of this Trainer Talk show here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, the Final Furlong show. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Lexington, Kentucky studios, getting ready to visit with the man of the hour, so to speak. It is trainer Ian Wilkes. He saddled Fort Larned to victory in this past Saturday's Breeders' Cup Classic. And Ian, nice enough to spend a little time with us here on Trainer Talk. Ian, welcome aboard. And first of all, congratulations, my friend.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate that.
Well, what a performance.
Yeah, the horse ran unbelievable, didn't he?
He was unbelievable. And I caught up with you a couple of nights before at the hotel, and we didn't really talk much about the horse, but I kind of tell that you were feeling pretty good coming into the race.
Yeah, you know, there was something about it. I was very content where the horse was, and I don't know. It's hard to explain sometimes. You just felt good about something. And I felt good all the whole time I was out there.
That wasn't just because you were talking to me?
No.
It had nothing to do with that.
It happens sometimes when you're training a horse that everything just comes together and you're not worried. You just know there's something inside of you. For me, it would only happen like once or twice a year, but for you probably more often because you have more horses. But it's just a feeling that you get that everything's going to go right for a change. And is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, you know, you're exactly right, dude. Like I was walking back, because I went down and watched some of the race, earlier races, and I sat in the box and watched the races and just enjoyed the day because, you know, great day of racing. And then I was walking back to my son, Brody, and, you know, I said to him, I said, you know, Brody, I said, I feel good about today. I said, I like everything about it. There's something about it. And I said, I think we'll be okay today. And fortunate enough, we were.
Yeah. Well, that ride was sensational. When Fort Larned opened up, they're going to the 3/8 pole. I turned to Mike. I said that this horse is gone. You know, I really felt good about his chances from then on. Did you have the same type of feeling, or were you still concerned till they hit the wire?
You know, I loved because I started moving. You know, he started to move at the 5/8 pole. And my daughter said to me, she said, you started laughing because he started moving. Because I said, yeah, because that's where I want him to start moving. And he started moving there. And I have to be honest, at the top of the stretch, just for in between, before the 8th pole, before Brian let turn Fort Larned to look at the other horse, I thought Mucho Mucho Man might get me. And then... And once the other horse looked at him, I felt good because he sort of kicked and sort of I was just looking for the wire then because I really felt he was going to hold him.
Yeah, talk about Brian for just a minute, Ian, and how good he's been with this particular horse. And by the way, I need to commend you. So many trainers, we see them make that decision to change riders at the last minute going into a big race. You stuck with Brian Hernandez as opposed to going with a more quote-unquote high-profile type of rider. But talk about how he fits this horse and how good he's been.
Brian's been marvelous. You know, he just, it's the whole thing about there's a chemistry, and he trusts the horse. And the key to it, and it doesn't matter what type of horse you have, whether it's a 5,000 claimer or whether it's a, you know, any type of horse, you have to let the horse do it. You can't make him do it. You can't, you know, pick him up and carry him. You have to let them take you there. And that's one thing he does with this horse, and he's done well with him. He's just get on there and just let him do his thing. And some days it the race sets up where he sits behind, and then there's the other races is where he lets him bowl along. And the other day, you know, I told him, I said, don't leave anything in the tank, you know. Let him run. Let him be who he is. And you go back and watch the skip away and watch that race, and you'll get an idea of what I think we have to do today.
Well, he followed directions to a T, because he rode a tremendous race aboard Fort Larned. And again, congratulations on that. He crosses the finish line, Ian. We were watching, of course, out back by the paddock is where our broadcast location was, but we had the television monitor in front of us, and the box just exploded, and you were hugging everybody. Everybody was embracing the kids, Shelby and Brody. They seemed to be ecstatic, obviously. What was that moment like? What do you remember about that exact moment when he hit the finish line?
It's something exhilarating. It's something you would love everyone to experience that. It's hard to explain. And just for an owner like Mrs. Whittam, just to see the look on the face, and I held my hand up, you know, after we celebrated in box, I walked back to her, and she kissed me on the hand, and that meant so much. Just the actions of Mrs. Whittam. She's a tremendous lady. I just really enjoy training for her.
Yeah, she's been an owner a long time. I thought it was really nice that Ron McAnally joined in the Winner's Circle ceremonies. He was her trainer in California for many, many years. I don't know if she still has horses with him out there or not, but I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that was. I really enjoyed that, because I stayed in Ron's barn. I stabled in his barn, and no, she doesn't have any with Ron at the moment. I've got most of them. And for Ron to join us in the Winner's Circle, to me, that made it special as well, because I respect Ron, because, you know, what a tremendous horseman. And for him to come down and participate in the celebration, that was something special.
He's a first-class guy. He really is. Not only a Hall of Fame trainer and had a fantastic career, but just a really good man all the way around. Can't say enough nice things about Ron McAnally.
Yeah, you know, I don't know him that well, but I'd certainly love to get to know him a little better, because I think he'd have some great stories to listen to.
And Ian, I can only imagine how special it must have been to be able to share this with your wife, Tracy. She's obviously a big part of your operation and been with you through so many highs and lows, no doubt, over the past several years. Talk about that.
Yeah. Trace is something special. She's the backbone. She's the one. If she never decided, you know, we made the decision together. And if she said, no, I didn't want to come back to America, we wouldn't have been here. She was happy to come, and that's what made it all. We made it together. We didn't do it, well, now I'm going, you know, you can come or you can stay, whatever. No, it was both our decision. That was important.
Yeah, and she's an integral part of what you do, obviously, with your training operation. She exercises horses in the mornings, and I imagine that has to go a long way. And you know, with you guys working together and everything, that has to be pretty special to be able to get to a high point like this with a Breeders' Cup Classic win.
Yeah, we've been very fortunate, been very blessed. We've been associated with some very good horses, and to be associated with this horse now, and have the possibility of him coming back next year and still have it being associated with him, that's pretty special.
Yeah, and you mentioned coming back to America. And it was both you and Tracy decided to do that together. You had a couple of stints here in the United States. Walk us back through the early days of Ian Wilkes' career and how you got started in the business, and take us through those days.
Well, yeah, it's a long way from, I grew up on a dairy farm. I grew up from a dairy farm and then went to a pub. How about that? From a dairy farm to a pub one year. And I said, it was happened to be a school teacher of mine, because I hated school. I was terrible at school. All I worried about was sport. And back home, you get the form in the middle of a newspaper. So I'd have the newspaper and get the form and follow the races. And the teacher said to me, he said, well, you know, if you really wanted to right away, then try and get a job. So I did. And I got a reply from, I think I must have wrote maybe a dozen letters to trainers, and I think I got six back. And I called one guy who was in Melbourne, and it was Angus Armanasco, and he said, you know, he said, I'll give you a job, but he said, you may want to go to Sydney because it's a little closer to home, so you can go back home and visit your parents. I said, okay. So I called Paul Sutherland, my next one I called, and he gave me a job. I didn't even finish school, and I was year 10. I didn't even finish that, so don't tell my kids.
So stay in school, kids.
And I said, I didn't need my school certificate to be a horse trainer. So my dad took me down to Sydney, and I went down there and went to work for him, worked for Paul for maybe a year and a half. Then I worked for Vic Thompson Jr. Then I went to work for Kerry Jordan. And then after that, I sort of wanted to travel a little bit. So I went to South Australia and worked for Colin Hayes, the leading trainer in Australia. I wanted to learn a little more, see a little more. And that's probably the best thing I ever did, because that's where I met Tracy. And of course, she was working for Colin Hayes at the time. And I met a girl while I was there that had worked for Carl, had just come back from America. And I said, man, I want to go. I said, how do I get a job? So I called up, and then Sharon Peters, who was Australian, that was assistant to Carl at the time, and said, you know, back in a job. I said, yeah. So that was perfect. So put in for my visa, and I come over in 89, April 89. I remember how fortunate, you know, come over and you're riding for Carl. And then I remember getting a horse, a big bay horse off the van up in Arlington. He had a big white face on him. And he happened to be unbridled. So what a fun. I thought this game was easy.
Yeah, how cool is that, right? You get to be around unbridled.
Yeah, I remember leading him off the van, a big white face on him, skinny, big colt, leggy. And we, you know, just a nice horse to be around. And that's where, you know, got to ride him, gallop him, go through the Derby, the Breeders' Cup, and then my visa had run out, so I had to go back home. I went home for 3 years, and I trained at home. And you know, I went home. The first year I was back home, I broke in 50. This is the best lesson I ever did. I broke in 50 horses that year. I had horses I trained that I could have got off and ran faster then. It just makes you look bad. And I was broke. I had no money. You know, just mismanaged my business. You know, it was the best lesson I ever did. If I never went through that, you know, it would never help me. I wouldn't understood the game. And Carl always said, if you ever want to come back, just call. So I called him, and he said, that job's still good? Of course, he never even hesitated. I thought he might have hesitated, but he didn't. And I come back in 93, and I've been back since 93.
Yeah, and you talk about working for a guy like Hall of Fame trainer Carl Nasker. I know you two are still very, very close. Talk about that relationship.
Oh, it's tremendous. You know, between Carl and Wanda, it's like our parents in America that we don't have over here, because our parents are in Australia. We have no family here except for Tracy, myself, and the kids. And you know, Carl and I, we think alike. we get on good. But if we disagree, we'll say what we we'll say if we disagree with each other. But it's not a case of stewing on it. We say it and then we say, okay, we're going to go this way. And if it turns out wrong, it's not, I told you so. We never look at backwards. We need to say, then we just move, well, we were wrong. Let's move on and change and move this way. And that's one thing that's been very important. It's never been, I told you so. It's always been, okay, we made a bad decision. Let's move on and keep moving forward. And, you know, he's a tremendous guy, tremendous horseman. You know, I can't say enough about what he has done for us, you know, Tracy and I.
Well, he's obviously been a good mentor, and you're always very generous with giving him credit for your success. But you've been doing a lot of this, you know, for a long time now on your own, and it's just a tribute to your stick-to-itiveness and your you know, operation that you've reached this new height, you know, because a lot of times when you have a smaller stable, you know, you don't get a lot of good opportunities, but you've certainly made the best of the opportunities you've been given. And now, you know, you're hitting the winner's circle on a very regular basis. That's got to make you feel pretty good.
It does, you know. Do you know what is special? You know, Carl set up this program, you know, with good owners, surrounding with good owners, and surrounding with good people to work for him. And for me to step in and carry on that legacy, and just to show the program that Carl had set up, and to keep moving it forward, that means a lot to me. You know, That means more than anything, just to be able to carry on what he put his the whole, you know, career, well, you know, 30 something years of training, I think it is, you know, I could be wrong on the years, but it's something like that, into training and developing that program, and to be able to carry it on, that's something special.
You know, Ian, you mentioned being around Unbridled and your first trip here to the United States. You've also been around the likes of Street Sense as well. You helped develop him into the 2007 Kentucky Derby winner. What stands out when you think back on those horses that you were around with Carl? What really sticks out when you think of the Street Senses of the world and the Unbridles of the world?
Boy, good horses take care of you. You know, just don't get in their way. They'll take care of you.
That's kind of been the theme of the show, you know. Good horses make good trainers, huh?
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, I can't train the slow ones. I can't train. You know, they're just slow. You know, and you love them because they try, but they just can't run. But good horses is the main thing. Is don't mess them up.
All right, outside of Fort Larned, because that's going to be too easy of an answer, who else would you rate as your favorite horse or favorite horses?
Well, you gotta like Captain Kenny Man Ken. He's a fun horse. He's always brings his A game, and you know the thing is, he just come back into the barn 2 days ago, and I think he's 7 years old now. So I'm coming back, give him another shot, and the old boy, he's full of life. He's a fun old horse. And of course, Warrior's Reward. He is a talented horse. I just think probably early on, I wish, you know, thinking back, and it's easy to say that, I wish I really dropped him back and then races going along. I wish I didn't push him to the lead as much then for that horse. And I think he might have competed better as a three-year-old going along. I think he could have got long.
Yeah, that's you know, hindsight's always 20/20, but you know, that's one of those things that every once in a while you get a horse that you think, man, I'd like to have that one back. I'd like to replay that career.
I know that's one of them, and you know, I'm a genius at looking back.
Yeah, with the hindsight 20/20 thing, right?
Yeah,
it's always 20/20. Ian, I'm gonna ask you this next question, but I want to set it up here for a second, because you and I talked that night, a couple nights before the Breeders' Cup, and you were going to the Breeders' Cup party. I think it was on Thursday night, and I was with my wife, Michelle, and you said, "Are you going to the party?" And I looked at you, and I said, "No, I have to get up really early." and I quickly realized you don't say that to a trainer. Go ahead.
Now you tell them what time you get up.
Right, yeah. Yeah, what's early, right? Define early. What's a typical day like in the life of Ian Wilkes? What time are you at the barn?
Oh, I get there about 5:30 in the morning, and, you know, probably not as early as I used to be when I was assistant. I've got Carlos at the barn, and he checks all the horses, and I come in and tells me the problems, and I go and have a look at them, and... So not as early as when I was assistant.
Yeah, that sounds like a typical trainer. I come in about 5:30, and Carlos tells me the problems, and I go look at them. That is a trainer's life in a nutshell right there, because it's never there's never a day when you go in when the assistant says, "Oh, everybody's just lovely today." That never happens.
No. Sometimes you like to put earplugs in, but that doesn't do you any good.
Yeah. I used to try to sneak in the back way and get the coffee ready for the boys and not have to deal with it, because I knew the other shoe was getting... The minute they knew I was in the office, I was going to hear something I didn't want to hear.
Yeah. It doesn't change. It hasn't changed.
Ian, do you think that having a win like this with Fort Larned, do you see that impacting your career over the next few months at all?
I'm going to enjoy it. as an impacting, I like the people I train for. You know, they've been with me for a while, and that's the good thing with the Steve Miles and the Randy Blocks and the Bob Lothenbachs. Mrs. Whittam, they've been with me a while. I really want to take care of them. They're very important to me, and because they were here when I was, you know, they didn't leave Carl. When I took over, they stuck with me. So that meant a lot to me.
Yeah, quality over quantity, and those personal relationships, hard to come by, for sure.
Yeah, I'd like to keep it the same. I don't want to get too big. I like being 70 horses is right where I like it. It's a good number.
Well, it is important, the relationships. I think you do a better job when you're enjoying your clients and you're not all stressed out. Sometimes you get customers that wear you out, you know, and if you have people that trust you and let you do your thing, you're a lot better off in the long run.
Yeah. I like our owners to be able to come to the barn and enjoy, talk to the help, enjoy them. You know, I want them to feel welcome anytime. If I'm not there, they can come in and look at their horse, joke around with Carlos or the exercise riders or anyone and have a good time. I don't want them to feel like I have to be there for them to feel that they're special. And I want them to understand and enjoy that my help is there and just to have a good relationship with them. That's important.
Trainer Ian Wilkes, our special guest here on Trainer Talk on HRN's Final Furlong Show. All right, Ian, I asked Eddie Keneally this question in the first half of the show. You get a day off, which is almost unheard of as a trainer, but you get a day off. What does Ian Wilkes like to do in his free time on a day off?
I don't mind golfing. I like to golf. Always I need more practice because I'm not shooting low enough, so I need more practice.
I found somebody you can beat, Ian. I'm sitting right next to him.
Bring him on.
Yeah, let's. How many golf balls do you lose in 18 holes?
It depends which course I'm playing.
Do you lose more than 18?
No, I have to be honest, not that many.
I found your man right here.
Yeah, I could lose 18 at pitch and putt. The damn windmill gets me every time.
Oh, Mike, I'm ready for a game anytime.
Whenever you're ready, we'll definitely get out and play. It'll be a lot of laughs for sure. How about your favorite vacation spot?
Oh, Vegas. Love Vegas.
Really?
Have you ever met an Aussie that doesn't like to gamble?
What do you like to play when you go to Vegas?
Anything I can win money at.
So it doesn't matter. Craps, blackjack?
Because I don't gamble much through the year. Because I stop gambling on my horses because it gives you a wrong outlook on the horses. So it's a great time. I take a week and I go out there and I'll bet on horses. I'll play blackjack, craps, anything, poker. I like it all.
You consider yourself a pretty good handicapper?
No. Have you ever met a horse trainer that's a good handicapper?
Well, retired horse trainers, maybe. I guess you have to retire before you can become a good handicapper.
Yeah. Then, you know, the problem is you just know a little too much to cause you to not be a good handicapper.
Yeah, sometimes you have to, your biases and, you know, that kind of
that's
stuff.
Right.
It does get in the way sometimes.
Yeah.
So. All right, let's have a little fun with this next trainer talk question here with Ian Wilkes. You and Tracy going out to dinner, what kind of food is it?
Ooh, usually like a steak, Thai food. Tracy loves Thai, but usually steak dinner or, you know, we're pretty open to anything, really.
Good man. All right, Ian, look, it's been a lot of fun having you aboard, as always. And, again, congratulations on Fort Larned. So happy for you and for Tracy, the kids, your whole operation, your owners. Really a class act, and really appreciate you being aboard here with us tonight.
Mike, I appreciate it, dude. It's been great. I really enjoy it.
All right, Ian, we'll catch up with you here soon. And
thanks for coming on.
Yeah, catch up with you along the road to 2013 with Fort Larned as well. Pretty cool. He's going to stay in training.
Yeah, that's good. And you know, the fortunate thing, I've got a horse called Neck and Neck that's going to run again next year too.
Oh, yeah. We were remiss in not talking about him. He's on quite a roll right now.
Yeah, yeah. He's a fun horse. You know, if you got to know him, he's got a lot of character.
Are you heading down to Gulfstream for the winter again?
Yes. Yeah, Palmetto's in Tampa.
All right, good. We'll be there opening day doing the claiming crown, so we'll probably see you then.
Yeah, what day is that on?
December 1st.
Opening day.
Oh, yeah, I should be there, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, excellent, buddy. Well, look, say hi to Tracy for us, and we'll look forward to catching up with you down there in Florida.
Okay, mate. Take care.
Thanks, Ian. Trainer Ian Wilkes. Fun guy, huh?
Yeah, he's a really good guy.
He's a golfer. I'm bringing the clubs to Florida now.
Okay.
Bringing the sticks.
That's
I don't go look for my ball if it's not in the fairway there because there's alligators.
Knock them in the head with a stomp.
See, you can imagine that I lose
that's Louisiana.
A lot of golf balls by not going to look for them down in Florida. I blame it on the alligators.
Yeah. That's... My wife hit a golf ball into an iguana once.
An iguana?
Yeah. We were in Puerto Rico, and she hit her shot, and it hit a iguana, a big old iguana. It kept it from going into the water, so she was quite happy. But then she had to hit the ball next to the iguana. She was not happy about that.
Oh,
so she made a little quick shot, and off we drove in
right.
The golf cart.
Yeah. We'll try to avoid those when we get down there as well. Look, been a lot of fun visiting with Eddie Keneally and with Ian Wilkes here on this Trainer Talk edition. Really, really enjoyed those two guys. They're both class acts and really super to have them on board. A podcast of this show is going to be available on our website here in the next 24 hours or so. So you can go there and listen on our website, horseracingradio.net. If you missed any portion of that interview with Ian or with Eddie, go there and listen on our website later on. And a reminder about tomorrow night is our listener call-in show, 6 to 7 Eastern time. So get ready to call in. If you want to recap Breeders' Cup with us, we can do that. Spend some time looking back on those events. And also, who do you think is going to be Horse of the Year? Is it Wise Dan and everybody else, or is there another shooter in the mix somewhere? We'll see.
Are you asking me?
I'm asking our listeners, because I'd like to hear from them tomorrow night.
Yeah, I'd like to hear from them, too.
Yeah.
Don't forget to call in. Don't be shy.
It'll be a good time.
888-966-HRRN. Write it down now so you have it for tomorrow.
Yep. And visit HRRNlive.com for more information on that. And, of course, horseracingradio.net. We are your home for the 2013 Kentucky Derby. A Road to the Derby schedule going to be posted on our site shortly as we bring you all of the point system races leading up to the Breeders' Cup next year, or to the Kentucky Derby next year. Breeders' Cup's done. Forget about that.
Yeah.
Until tomorrow night when you call in to talk to us about
it. Thing of the past.
Right.
We're looking ahead.
All right. For our producer, Lee Della Pina, Jude Feld, Ponte for the Big Four, I'm Mike Pena. We will talk to you tomorrow on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Good night, Barbados.